Good evening, everyone. You're listening to UR Radio at Western North Carolina Community Media Center. I hope you stay with us for the next hour as we explore the teachings of various enlightened ones. Our show is called Conscious Co-Creating, Tools to Empower You. And I hope you join us every Thursday evening from 8 to 9 Eastern. I'm Louisa Dyer, a holistic counselor and metaphysical author, and a Western North Carolina native, I'm happy to say. And if you'd like to know more about who I am, feel free to visit my website at louisadyer.com or louisadyer.net. In the second half of the show, you're invited to go to the Conscious Co-Creating Online Radio Facebook page, where you can submit any questions or comments or suggestions. We would absolutely love to hear from you. Last week, we talked a lot about Byron Katie, and before that, we talked a lot about David Hawkins. And my intention in this show is to share a lot of the tools that are available so that anyone who wants can learn how to thrive instead of just survive. And most of who I'm talking about are enlightened ones. And last week, we talked a little bit about Byron Katie's waking up experience. And tonight, we actually have a woman here who does the Byron Katie work and has been doing that for a while. And her name is BJ Harden Jones, and she calls herself a lover of the work with Byron Katie, and we're going to be talking to her this evening. Hello, BJ.
Hello.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm very well.
Good. Wonderful. So we're going to be talking to BJ a little bit about her experience with Byron Katie and the work and what it's meant in her life. And I just wanted to say a little bit more about what this show is about for those who are just joining us. And basically, we're talking about my favorite teachers, David Hawkins, Byron Katie, Eckhart Tolle, and Michelle Wright of Paralandra. And the first three of those are very clearly enlightened beings. And I don't know why I'm getting all this feedback. I hope you're not hearing it. The first three of those are very certainly enlightened beings, and they all have websites where you can actually get a lot of incredible information about personal growth and spiritual evolution. All three of those, Tolle and Hawkins and Katie, have contributed greatly to the evolution of humanity. And Michelle Wright is at Paralandra as a woman who has learned how to communicate directly with nature and developed incredible ways to take care of your health physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And so really the basis of this show is pretty much talking about those four people and their contributions to our personal growth and spiritual evolution. And I just wanted to follow up a little bit with last week we talked about Byron Katie. The work that she does is called The Work. And if you want to know more about that, there's just tons of information, and everything is on her website so that you can actually do that yourself. And it's called thework.com. And so we're going to actually talk with BJ now and find out what her experience has been with that. And my purpose in doing this is so that you can just get a taste of what it might be for you if you wanted to explore Byron Katie's work. So let's just start with asking BJ kind of what the work has meant to her, and then we'll spend a little bit of time in a little while talking about how you actually do it. So, BJ, tell us how the work has impacted you.
Good question. How the work has impacted me. I would say it's been incredibly profound in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It has allowed me to understand myself,
mm-hmm.
In ways that I never had before. It has allowed me to understand what it means to think a thought, to have a belief, to tell a story about myself, to say I am BJ. It's just so fundamental. It's so incredibly simple and profound at the same time. Yeah.
So how would you say it's impacted you?
How concretely it has impacted me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you were asking me earlier to think of a specific example of
right.
of what has happened in my life. Mm-hmm. And a few months ago, I was talking with a friend about my relationship with my body,
mm-hmm.
which is so core to my stories about myself. And I've most of my life thought of my body, having a body, being a spirit in a body. I've thought of my body as a burden.
Hmm.
And I've thought that I am primarily spirit. and that being in a body weighs me down, confines me and limits my experience. That's been what I have thought.
Uh-huh.
About what it means to be human, what it means for me to be human.
So there was a bit of a struggle in you.
Absolutely.
About being human.
Yeah.
Let me just apologize. If you guys are picking up, there is a band in the
in the
TV studio, and this room is obviously not soundproof. And so our mics are so powerful that they are picking up the sound coming through these very... sort of semi-soundproofed walls. So what you're hearing in the background is a band in the studio, and they actually sound pretty good. But I apologize if that's difficult to listen to. So hopefully we can get through this. Try to just enjoy the beat, maybe. Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
So another aspect of what that has looked like for me, that story, has been that I've thought, well, I'm primarily spirit. In a body, and I'm trapped in this body, but everyone else is actually human. So I've thought, well, I'm not really human, but everyone else is really human. So it's been this barrier between me and other people.
Uh-huh.
And just to be clear, this story hasn't most of my life been conscious. You know, I haven't gone around thinking I'm not human. You're human. You know, it's one of those things that we tell ourselves that's just beneath the surface. And that I've been uncovering the past few years.
Uh-huh.
So a couple months ago, I was talking to my friend about my relationship with my body. And I had this image as I was trying to describe it to her. And it was like, I'm a balloon. And I saw this beautiful sunny day. And it was this pink balloon with a little cotton string. And that was me. And
mm-hmm.
it was waving in the wind and just so gentle in the breeze, and it was lit up with the sunshine. And then I kept looking at that image, and it was tied down to this rock, and the rock was sitting there on the ground. And I felt this like, oh my God, the rock, that is my burden. That is my, that's what, you know, limits my experience, and that's what keeps me from being my fullest self. And she was helping me go do the work on this belief.
Right.
And in the process of doing the work on it, I saw it, the image shifted so much. What I saw didn't change at all. There was still the balloon and the string and the rock and the sunshine and the breeze and all of that. But it was like the rock was such a gift that I could see that the rock was there for me.
Right.
My body was there for me, absolutely. And that my spirit that loves to wander and daydream and be free and float around is absolutely served by being in a body. And my body, the rock, is always present, so that the balloon doesn't have to be present in every moment, but that I can be present whenever I need to be, whenever I want to be, because my body's always here in the present moment. My body never leaves the present moment. And I just was overwhelmed with this, like, these waves of gratitude and love for my body. And I could just see my body as like this goddess, this absolute like love goddess that is a house for my spirit and and welcomes my spirit, my mind, my consciousness, whatever, back to the present moment whenever I want to, and allows me to wander away whenever I want to. And it's just so free. So free with that. So giving. It never, when I, you know, when I come back, it doesn't say, where were you? Why weren't, you know, it's just always here for me. And the scene just shifted so profoundly so that I could see a different truth.
Yeah. What a relief. That sounds like a real relief.
Yeah.
To know that you're always here. And
yeah.
That the body's a gift instead of a burden.
Exactly.
So how did doing the work, how did that shift happen? I mean, the work is basically, I mean, we talked about this last week, the work is basically four questions and a turnaround. And I'm hoping that I can get BJ to talk about that just a little bit. But we'll talk about that in more depth in a minute. But what I really want to know is, how did the work do that? How did that happen?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge paradigm shift.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for me, in my experience of the work, it's a reminder to be open.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, it's like our minds, and I'll speak about my experience.
Yes.
My mind, when it believes something, for instance, I'll say, that rock weighs me down. My body is a burden. Okay, so say I'm believing that. And my mind is just stuck on that. It's in a triggered place, and I can feel it in my body. My nerves get, you know, jiggly and or tingly, and my skin gets hot, and I get uncomfortable, and my heart beats faster, and I just feel like, oh my God, what am I doing here? This is awful. Let me run away. So I can feel that in my body. And then, so the first question is it true? So I could say, my body is a burden. Is it true? And that's a reminder for me to look at that story and release my mind's grip on it. Allow my mind to look at something else. Like, is that true? My body is a burden. And just, I can feel the grip, like, just loosen a little bit. Okay, well, is it true? I don't know. Maybe. Is my body a burden? Is it true? And then I can see other possibilities. Well, I can see where my body's not a burden. Maybe it's not true, maybe it's true. And either answer is fine. Yes or no is fine. I'm just wanting to see if it's possible that there is another answer beyond what my mind is clinging to so desperately. And then the second question, can I absolutely know that it's true? For me, in my practice, that answer is almost 100% of the time, no.
Right, because or what can maybe, you really know for
right,
sure?
Right, for me, I cannot, I have found that I, so far, I can't absolutely know anything is true. And for other people, that's different. Some people do say, yes, I can absolutely know. But that's perfect. That is the work. It is personal. So when I come to number two, can I absolutely know that my body is a burden? Well, no. I can't absolutely know that my body is a burden. And then number three is how do I react when I'm believing that story?
Right.
The thought my body is a burden and this rock is weighing me down. It's looking at what happens for me when I'm believing that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's looking at my nerves get tingly, you know, my skin gets hot, my thoughts start racing. I am looking for the door. How do I get out of here? anything like that. That's an answer. I look at how am I treating myself? I'm not enjoying how I treat myself. I treat my body or treat the thoughts that I'm having. I usually don't enjoy the thoughts that I'm having about other people or the thoughts that I'm having about the moment. There's a lot of ways to look at how do I react.
Right.
So it's just taking note. When I believe my body is a burden, those things happen. Wow. Good to know. Because so much of the time we don't realize
right.
that the thought is creating this experience. So number four is, who would I be without that thought? My body is a burden. Sometimes that's a tricky one, because
sometimes you can't imagine it.
Exactly, and that's the perfect answer. I don't know is
right.
Fine. Yeah, I don't
that
know.
That part is that thought is so much a part of me, or
I've never been without that
thought. I know, never been without that thought. Who would I be without that thought? I have no idea.
Yeah. And often, even if we have never been without that thought, we can just suppose you didn't have that thought.
Right.
I don't know who I'd be without it, but just suppose I didn't have it. What might happen?
Right.
Who might I be without that thought? Yeah, so I can look at that. My body is a burden. Who would I be without that story? And, you know, I think maybe it was this question that really turned it around for me a couple months ago. I'm feeling it right now. Who would I be without that story? That my body is a burden? Because I can feel it. Without that story, I'm free.
Uh-huh.
My body is not a burden. If I'm not believing that it's a burden, my body's not hurting me, not holding me down, not doing anything except for being here, being my perfect gift. So it's going through those four questions just allows a little more space.
Right.
Allows more space because my mind is wanting to believe this. It's clamping down. It's trying to prove it. It's trying to show me all the ways that it's true. No, my body is a burden. Remember yesterday? Remember in third grade? Oh my God, right now I can't stand it. You know, it's trying to prove that this story is true. And so just giving a little space to something else allows us to see what else might be true. And then there's the turnaround. And there's a lot of ways to do the turnaround. Basically, the turnaround is a way of looking at the opposite of what we're believing in that moment. So I could say, my body is a burden, my body is not a burden. Or I could say, what's the opposite of a burden? My body is freeing. My body is a gift. And so then we find an example of a turnaround. One of the opposites. So I could say, my body is a gift. Let me look at some examples of how that's true. Give my mind some proof,
mm-hmm.
some looking at how it might be true that my body is a gift. And then go through, well, my body is a gift because it allows me to be here sitting in a radio studio right now. And if I was spirit with no body, not embodied, I couldn't be on a radio show. There we go. It's giving me this opportunity. And so looking at specific examples of how it might be true. My body is a gift. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
That does. That's a wonderful example. And the thing that I'm thinking of, because this winds up being what happens for me a lot, is another turnaround.
Yeah.
The one that actually works for me really the best usually is when I'm thinking any thought like that, my body is a burden. Especially when I have a hard time thinking of the opposite or finding a way that it's true. What Katie suggests doing is putting my thinking or my thoughts into the place of whatever was there and saying, my thinking is a burden.
Yeah.
And boy, is it easy to see how that's true.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes really evident for me in that moment that, oh my, it's my thoughts that are causing this angst or this problem rather than whatever it is, the thing itself.
Yeah.
It's my thoughts, because that's what's actually causing the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that piece that she put that she puts that in there as a way to do that, to substitute your thinking or your thoughts for that. So it sounds like you've really been freed up in the last couple of months.
I've experienced a big shift in some of my core stories.
Well, that's really wonderful.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
It is exciting.
That's wonderful. Well, BJ is a beautiful young woman, and she's actually been in Asheville for a couple of years and has a beautiful daughter and a wonderful son. Sorry, where did I get daughter?
I don't know. That's
pretty funny. She has a beautiful son and a wonderful extended family. And she's actually begun working with clients doing various sorts of healing work, including Byron Katie's work and some other energy work. And if you would like to get in touch with BJ, you can certainly do that through contacting me, Louisa Dyer, which you can do on my website. And I think what we're going to do here is take a little musical break and put the right side of our brains into action with the left side and generate some movement between body and soul here. And so I just want to say again that you're listening to UR Radio. This is Louisa Dyer, and the show is Conscious Co-Creating, Tools to Empower You, and Happy Holy Days, everyone, whatever it is your traditions are celebrating this time of year. I'm going to play a little, one of my favorite songs is called Time for a Change by a band here to hear, which is a very conscious band who are playing all over the world now, and they're quite amazing. So enjoy this little musical interlude, and we will be back in about 3 minutes.
Where my heroes at? Where my soldiers at? Where my presidents and citizens and all that jazz? Where my artists at? Where my dreamers at? Where my activists and hippie chicks and I know that we can do it, we can change the world. I know that we can be it, we can be the change we like to see. I know that we can do it, we can change the world. I know that we can be it, we can be the change we like to see. Where my scientists and pharmacists, my dealers at? Where my mother's at? Where my father's at? Where my human beings with beating hearts? Let's rock this track! I know that we can do it, we can change the world. I know that we can be it, we can be the change we like to see. I know that we can do it, we can change the world.
Certainly time for a change. You're listening to UR Radio. This is Louisa Dyer, and I am here tonight with BJ Harden Jones, and we are talking about Byron Katie's work and helping ourselves have stories that hurt less and feel better. I think that's the primary message that I get from Byron Katie's work. And I had the pleasure of interviewing her and working with her a few years ago, and it was just incredibly delightful. And I think I told a little bit about that story last week, where instead of being so distressed about everything happening in the world, just one sort of experience with Katie's work helped me realize that I really did not know for sure that any of that should not be happening. You know, no matter how I liked it or didn't like it or what stories I told myself, the fact that I was telling myself those stories that it should not be happening, when in fact it was, ecological stuff, governmental stuff, I was really distressed a lot. And the minute I heard that second question, can you absolutely be sure that it's true? It was like BJ was saying earlier, no, I can't be 100% sure. For me, the answer to that first question is almost always yes. Mm-hmm. Are you sure? Yeah. Because if I weren't sure, at least, you know, on a superficial level, then I wouldn't have the problem.
Why were we talking about it in the first place? Yeah, it's true.
I mean, that's the reason I'm having a problem, is because I think that's true and I hate it. And so whatever the issue is, this should not have happened. That should have happened. It's like, is that true? And it's like, yes, obviously. And then the question gets asked, can you absolutely know for sure that that's true? And the first time that happened, I was actually talking with Katie. And when she asked me that question, I looked at her and went, you mean like from God's perspective? And she said, sure, if you believe in that. Yeah, from that big of a perspective. And I'm like, gosh, from that big of a perspective, how can I know anything for sure? And she laughed and she said, welcome to reality. And so that's always stuck with me. So for those of you who do the work, I just wanted to put that out there, that it often happens that way, that the answer is yes, of course it's true. And then can you know for sure? It's like, well, not 100%. That's usually where I go. And then it's like, right, I can't know that it's true. So anyway, I want to ask BJ a little bit more about how she actually came to be involved with Katie's work, and sort of what the process has been for her. Because she told me right before we came into the studio that she's actually working with other people doing this. And I do a little bit of that in my counseling work, but I don't do a lot of it because I certainly don't feel like an expert in it. But I'll tell you that question, is it true? Is that true? Is a really good question just to know. So how did you... You know, how did you get involved? How were you turned on to this work in the first place?
Mm-hmm. It was a gradual process for me. I was first introduced to it a couple weeks after my son was born.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pretty stressful time in my life. I felt really prepared in some ways. I had really prepared myself for pregnancy.
Uh-huh.
And for labor and delivery. And I hadn't really prepared myself for having a child. It didn't feel like. And then when
how could
there,
you possibly?
How could I? Exactly. And then when he was there, there was just a lot of, okay, what do I do now? What's a diaper? I don't know. how do I continue to be myself? Or because I consistently throughout my life, I've been on a path of self-discovery, but I also was specifically feeling like I was on my path before he came, and then there he was, and I felt like I was losing myself, and yeah. How do I continue to be myself when I feel like I'm constantly meeting the needs of this other person? I'm losing myself in this other person. A friend, I was at a gathering, and a friend I made at the gathering, she and I were talking about money and what money means. And I had this sort of offhand, like, dismissive, like, money, you know, like, oh, who needs it, or it's so confusing, or, there's so many problems with money or something. I don't remember exactly what it was that I was talking about, but it's just somehow this just little like dismissive, like, ah, whatever. It's confusing and frustrating or something. And she just looked at me with this knowing look and was like, money just gives you more of who you are, just like everything else. And I looked at her. What does that mean? You know, I didn't ask that, but I just kind of looked back at her, and then she told me about the work and that she thought that I would be really interested in it. And it's true, yeah. I didn't really dive into it then. Like I said, it's been a gradual thing for me. I didn't at that time in my life give a lot of space to devoting myself or learning about the work.
It's very difficult when you have a newborn to do anything except take care of a newborn.
Exactly.
I work with a lot of new mothers, and I mean, that's your life.
Yeah.
I tell them, get all the sleep you can.
Yeah.
Get all the rest you can. Do everything you've ever wanted to do while you are pregnant, because once this child is born, you will not have any time, energy, or interest in anything for at least 6 weeks, except taking care of this baby.
Yeah.
And probably 3 to 6 months, but certainly for the first 6 weeks, it will be your life.
Yeah.
So how do you do anything else?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So how old was your son when she told you this?
Let's see. About a month.
Wow, so you were still really in it.
Definitely.
Did you read a book, or did you go to a weekend or something?
Well, we were at this gathering, and it was an open space event, which means that everyone there was participating in creating the event then. Mm-hmm. And so we started talking about the work, and she said, well, I'm going to offer a workshop on it, you know, tomorrow or something, and so come and I'll, you know, lead you through the steps. And so, yeah, and it was really basic. I think it was just a half-hour little thing, but it went through the four questions, and I didn't really get it, you know, because in my experience, the work is like a paradox. It's incredibly simple. Just
very, very simple.
Incredibly simple, and as profound as you can make it.
So you planted a seed that weekend.
I did, yeah, and I felt it like, okay, the work, bookmark, look at this later, you know? And then it was probably a year and a half later that I picked up a book. I think it was A Thousand Names for Joy was the first one that I looked at.
Oh, yeah, that's her third book.
Is it?
Yeah, that is a beautiful book.
Yeah.
That if you want to read a book that describes what it's like to live in an unconditional state of love, read that book. It's just beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was so affirming for me, too, because a lot of what I have experienced of myself since doing the work is sort of like my friend said about money then, like it'll just give you more of what you are.
Uh-huh.
That's what the work has done. It's like, because I have always been interested in the profound and questioning reality and, you know, thinking that I was a spirit and not a human. And but then that was a barrier between me and people.
Right.
yeah, I'm just thinking about what you said before about barriers and boundaries. Yeah, got a little distracted for a second. Okay.
And yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, it put up a barrier before when I thought, well, I'm really interested in thinking about things in this really deep, profound way. Along with that idea, what was when I would think that, it made me feel lonely. It made me feel like an outcast, but I was the one who was casting myself out or casting everyone else out of my lonely little world or whatever.
I'm this and they're not, therefore I can't talk to them.
Exactly, exactly. And so it was incredibly affirming, and also took me farther than I had gone in that exploration of looking at questioning reality. So yeah, it was just offering me more of who I already was, and more in this way that is incredibly liberating. So, yeah.
And so you read. She read the last book first, folks. This tells us a lot about who she is, doesn't it? So you started with the third book, A Thousand Names for Joy, which is, seriously, it's like written at a, when we were talking about the David Hawkins map of consciousness, that whole book, A Thousand Names for Joy, probably calibrates at a level of 540 unconditional love. The whole thing is just so beautiful, and Katie just describes her experience of living like that, where she just loves everything.
Yeah.
It's quite delightful. So you read that book.
Yeah.
And she actually teaches you how to do the work in that book, because mm-hmm. that's what Katie's always doing. No matter what she's doing that. And did you feel like you actually learned how to do it and were applying it? Or did you then want to go back and... Because the first book, mm-hmm. Loving What Is much more the sort of the how-to,
yeah, the
introductory.
Handbook. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you go back and do that to really learn how to apply it?
I don't really remember what my process was.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it just felt like once I was diving in, I was just immersed in it. And it also has felt gradual in terms of my integrating it into my life and my really living it. But yeah, I don't really remember. I mean, I have read Loving What Is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently reading I Need Your Love, Is That True?
Which I think is the most challenging book for most women.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Because it really explodes the sort of unacknowledged codependency,
yeah,
that women have been conditioned and programmed in, yeah, for at least 6,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that book just blows that whole thing wide open.
Yeah.
There is not a codependent pattern that isn't just blown right out of the water,
mm-hmm.
In that book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm only on, like, page 5 or something, but I'm like, oh my God, I love this book.
Yeah.
I've just been sort of carrying it around with me in my bag, just
right.
sort of seeping it in without reading it.
Right. One of the things that I remember from the first time that I met Katie, she actually said this on stage, and it so blew my mind. Somebody was talking to her about God, and they were having a lot of angst about their whole religious, spiritual thing, and... they were talking to Katie about, you know, didn't she have a wish for the world? Didn't she have a prayer? Did she pray? Did she want God to do things? And, you know, Katie just kind of looked at the woman and said, well, you know, no, I don't have a prayer. Everything is great. Really, just like it is. She said, but if I had a prayer, my prayer would be, God, please spare me from wanting anybody's love or approval.
Yeah.
And I think every woman in the audience just about hit the floor. I mean, it was like, what? But that's what she said. If I had a prayer, it would be, God, spare me from the desire for anyone's love or approval.
Yeah.
What a concept.
Yeah. And she says, it's not your job to love me, it's my job.
Exactly. She's great with those pithy sayings.
Yeah. Oh, she is.
She has a lot of those really great pithy sayings. What is your favorite thing that you, your favorite little saying of Byron Katie's? I think for me it's that one that I just said. It's like,
spare me from the desire.
Yeah, deliver me from the desire for someone's love or approval.
Yeah.
Because that has caused certainly every woman more pain. You know, as a psychologist for a number of years, if I counted all the people that I've worked with, probably 90% of the angst that has sat in front of me over the 30 years,
yeah,
would be, he or she doesn't love me. Why? How? When?
Yeah.
Where? It's about that.
Yeah.
I want more love, attention,
yeah,
whatever from someone else.
Yeah. And maybe when 95. I don't have it,
maybe
90. It's a problem.
It's a problem. Yeah. Maybe 95% instead of just 90. But yeah, that's the big thing. So it's like that. It's like, wow, deliver me from that.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite? Do you have one?
Right now, my favorite one that sticks with me that's really juicy is something that Katie said to me. I recently went, in October, I went to a 9-day school for the work.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
Just in October.
Just in October.
So you must still be really high from that.
Yep, probably so. But how can I know?
Is it true?
Yeah. In between sessions, there was something that had, or in one of the sessions, there was something that had come up for me, and I went up to Katie and was asking her a question about, let's see, what was the question about? I remember. So someone had been talking about depression, and saying, oh, I feel so depressed. And Katie said something like, in that moment when you believe you're depressed, the mind will have you believe that it's true forever.
Ooh.
And I heard her say that, and I went, okay, now wait a second. Why is it that the mind will have us believe something, you know, quote unquote negative, or something that goes against our true nature?
Something that hurts.
Something that hurts. Why is that? Why will our mind have us believe that? But then when I believe my body's a gift, or I believe everything's okay, why is my mind not grabbing onto that and trying to prove that that's true? And that was my question for Katie. Do you have some perspective on why our minds grab onto these things that aren't true for us and not the things that, you know, are consistent with our nature? And what she said was, I think it's because of the culture we live in. It's because that's what your mom has told you with her words and her actions, and your dad and your grandparents and your teachers, and it's what is on the TV and the radio and, you know, things like that. And so I said, yeah, so it, because it's just, that's the paradigm, that's the dominant paradigm, that we live in a dualistic reality, and we believe there's something wrong that needs to be fixed.
Right.
And she said, yeah, that's why. And the question is, this is my juicy word, my juicy statement or saying from Katie. The question is, what do you believe?
Huh.
She said, because they were believing that, you know, and they taught you that.
Right.
The question is, what do you believe?
Uh-huh. Boy, that gives me chills.
Yeah. Because, in that moment she was saying, like, you, right now.
Right.
It doesn't matter what they taught you. It doesn't matter what you think they taught you. What do you believe? I like that one. Yeah.
That's very startling. I mean, that really does give me chills all over. Because that goes straight to the heart of, you know, I've often said, oh, well, yeah, we only have 6,000 years of training, you know, 6,000 years of socialization. And that's an explanation, but it's also an excuse.
Yeah.
And so that just cuts right through that. Yeah. Okay, yeah, you do. And what do you believe?
Yeah. Or, yeah, you do. Can you absolutely know that that's true? Can you absolutely know anything other than this moment?
Right. Right.
6,000 years ago? I have no idea.
Yeah, what does that even mean?
What, 6,000 years ago? What is 6,000 years? What is a year?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you believe?
What do you believe? I think that is a wonderful... It's like, just take this moment and just know that, you know, a lot of times when you're on a path of personal growth, spiritual growth, especially if you're working in the whole metaphysical field, you learn early on that the whole understanding of physics and everything, of that what you experience externally is a reflection of something happening internally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way the universe is designed. That's just the way energy happens. And so when you really sort of have a understanding of that, what you notice immediately is that what you experience externally depends on what you're telling yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the greatest example of that is if I'm outside and it's 40 degrees and I come inside and it's 70, I'm going to be taking stuff off because 70 feels really, really hot. Because, after 40 degrees, 70 is really hot.
Yeah.
But if I'm outside working in the garden and it's 95 degrees and I'm sweating like crazy and I come into the house and the air's on and it's 70, it's going to feel so cool. It's going to feel so good.
Yeah.
So is 70 degrees warm or cold? Is it warm or is it cool?
Yeah.
It has no, it has no concrete, absolute reality. It's what I think about it. It's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
It's what my perspective is when I walk into that. And so that's really what that question means of what do you believe?
Yeah.
And if you don't know what you believe, which is how a lot of people actually answer that, you know, what do you believe? I don't know what I believe. The way that you can often tell what you believe is by what you're experiencing externally, because it will show you what you believe.
Yeah.
And if it's something that you don't like, then you can pretty well bet that you're believing a belief that simply isn't true for you.
Yeah.
And if it is something you like, then you wouldn't be questioning it. So there's not an issue.
Yeah. I had an experience that was sort of similar to what you're talking about in a different kind of a way, but another experience that I had of projection, of realizing how what I was experiencing was really my relationship with that, which is me, you know?
Right.
Okay, so I was in a room with a friend, and she was sitting in a chair facing away from me, and I was having this story about her, about being annoyed with her and something that she'd done or something. I don't even remember what it was, but I was
and like, it probably felt so important at the time.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? They feel so important at the time, and later we're like, I don't even know. Whatever.
Right.
But I was grumpy, basically. And I was attributing that to her. Like, she did that thing, and that's why I feel this way. And I just had this moment of looking at that belief and that feeling and realizing, like, experiencing what I've heard about projection, you know, like this holographic,
right.
Like, anything that I think, that I have an experience of is just my projection of that. And I realized that my feeling of being grumpy and she shouldn't blah, 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 was my creating that. And I felt that, and I felt that in that moment when I was in a place of anything less than unconditional love for that friend over there with her back towards me sitting in the chair not knowing that I was looking at her was not self-love, was less than my full potential, and that I was creating that. That I was creating that experience for myself of less than unconditional love and attributing it to her.
Right.
And I just felt that. It gave me chills in that moment. I was like, oh my God, I created that. You know, like I saw that I was creating her. You know, I don't know whether she exists outside of my thought of her or not, but I could see that in that moment, my relationship with her and how I felt about her was absolutely the creation of my thoughts
exactly.
in that moment, and that I wasn't loving myself in that moment
right.
when I wasn't loving her.
Because
right. I was creating my experience of being less than unconditionally loving, which isn't my true nature and
right.
isn't my full potential, and it was me.
And isn't that empowering when that happens?
Yeah.
See, I watch people do that a lot, where we get so afraid to own to face or acknowledge what Eckhart Tolle would call the pain body, we get so afraid, like, oh God, I can't look at that. It's so terrible and awful. And we don't, we're afraid that it's going to be so big, bad, and ugly. And what we forget is how empowering it is.
Yeah.
Because the minute I own that that's my crap out there, then I have power again.
Yeah.
The minute I own it, I can do something about it.
Yeah.
As long as I think, hey, you have a problem, as long as I think it's outside of me,
it's pushing it away,
there's nothing I can do about it. Absolutely nothing I can do about
it.
But if I own it and go, okay, wonder how I'm creating that, if I don't know.
Yeah.
Just the wondering begins to give me my power back.
Exactly. The curiosity, the wondering.
Right.
And for me, it's humility.
It is humility.
Bringing humility to it. It's just, oh God, I can feel the softness of it. And it just kind of makes me want to weep sometimes with joy. Just the incredible perfection of being in awe.
Yeah. And you feel like Katie's work has given you a lot of that, given you access to
it
that.
It has helped me. It has helped me, get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I've always kind of seen, I like to look more profoundly at those things, but I don't know how to, get there and also it was like, when I go there, I feel lonely and I feel different and I feel awful and I don't want to go there. The work has helped me, transition that story to a place that isn't so lonely and I'm not alone when I go there.
Right.
And it has helped me have a focused container.
Wonderful.
Of how to go there. Because a lot of my questioning reality has been in a sort of unfocused, dreamy, spaced out kind of a place. And
well, yeah, you were trying to get away from that rock.
Right. I was trying to float away into the clouds. Where would that get me? But the work, I mean, and it can help with getting into a dreamy space.
Right.
But with a laser, with a such a focus of is that true? It's just so clear.
Right.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, amazingly, we are about out of time.
Wow.
I know. Didn't that go very fast?
Good job.
I just wanted to say thank you very much. This has been delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping we can do this again sometime. I've discovered that I really enjoy interviewing people. But I do want to say that what's very funny about sitting in a radio station with BJ is that she talks with her hands more than I do and makes all these wonderful faces. So I think she actually needs a TV.
That's next.
Yeah, we're both just sitting here talking and using our hands to do that. But anyway, we are just about out of time here this evening, and it's just gone so fast. And I just wanted to thank everybody for being here and listening with us, and thank BJ. And I really do hope that hearing about Katie's work has inspired you to at least ask the question, is it true, with the next painful or stressful dynamic that you're in with yourself. And I wanted to just briefly mention the three books that I'm very aware of Katie has out, and I think we've mentioned all three of them. The first one is Loving What Is, the second one is I Need Your Love, Is That True? And the third one is A Thousand Names for Joy. And they are three extraordinarily different books. And so, just see which one attracts you, because that's probably going to be the one that you're going to enjoy the most first. And so I'm not quite sure what we're going to be talking about next week. We will leave that up to the Happy Holy Days spirit and see what happens. But I wanted to thank everyone for joining us. Again, you are listening to UR Radio at Western North Carolina Community Media Center. This is Louisa Dyer, and I'm very happy to be your host for this evening. And I am going to go out on our theme song, which is another one from Here to Here, called Your Dreams. And please join us next Thursday at 8 Eastern, and I will look forward to seeing you then. If you want to stick around and listen to some great music, I'm going to be doing that after this show. So we're going to have a good time for another hour, and I hope you stay with me. Have a great evening. Enjoy this song, Here to Hear, singing your dreams.